Hey, this is Greg Little from Bethany Baptist Church. I'm so thankful that you decided to join us on this podcast. I trust that the Lord will use it in your life to encourage you, strengthen you, and challenge you wherever you are in your walk with Him. For more information about Bethany, you can visit us online at bethanybc.ca. Now let's open our hearts and minds to what the Lord has for us. Take your Bible and turn with me to Matthew chapter number 25. Matthew chapter 25, we're finishing out this chapter this morning. It's kind of been a whirlwind through Matthew 24 and 25. We've taken a lot off in each passage, and we're going to finish here in Matthew 25, starting in verse 31 and down to verse number 46. And so when you found that, we will read it together. I'll read, you follow along. Matthew 25, starting in verse number 31. When the Son of Man shall come in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then shall He sit upon the throne of His glory. And before Him shall be gathered all nations, and He shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And He shall set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the King say unto them on His right hand, Come, ye blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was a hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the King shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, in everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered, or a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. It was Amanda's birthday a couple of days ago. I won't tell you what number it was, but it was her birthday, and so we were celebrating that together, and I had a few presents for her, but the kids also wanted to get her something, and they wanted to do that from themselves, and so we decided to, we were going into town anyway, so we went into the mall there, McAllister Place, for a little while to look around and see if we could find something for her birthday from the kids, and see if there was anything that they wanted to get. And that was the first mistake, taking the kids into the mall. Because have you ever gone into the mall shopping for somebody else and come out with a whole bunch of bags, but it's all for you and not for anybody else? I don't know if you've ever done that before. Well, that what was supposed to be shopping for mom's birthday became a whole lot of, hey, look at all these back to school sales. Look at these sneakers. Look at this bag. Look at these clothes. Look at all of these things. And I said probably two or three times that, listen, this is not about you. We're here shopping for mommy. We're trying to get something for her. We're thinking of and we're looking for someone else and not for you. And I say that jokingly. They didn't buy anything for themselves. We got some things for Amanda and came home and celebrated her birthday. But it reminded me, saying that a couple times, this is not for you. It reminded me of this truth of something that we see so often, that we live in a culture that trains us to ask one main question in just about every single situation. And that question that culture trains us to ask all the time is this: what's in it for me? What about me? What do I get out of this? Well, what's in it for me? From advertising to social media to many relationships in themselves in this day and age, the driving force, the filter that everything is viewed through in this society is this lens of personal benefit. What is in this for me? What's in this relationship for me? What's in this possession for me? Whatever it might be, what is it for me? How can I benefit from this transaction? How can I benefit from this relationship? And if there's no benefit, if there's nothing for me, then I don't need it. That's how we've been trained to think in today's society. We live in a very consumerism-driven society. I need this and I need that, and it's all about what I can get for me. And to be honest with you this morning, this consumerism mentality creeps into the church as well. And many people come to church and their thought is, what can I get out of this? What's in it for me? You know, I'm going to church for their kids program or for this program or for their music or whatever it might be. And it's, what can I get out of this? And that's that consumerism mentality that often creeps into the church as well. And that can creep into our own mindset of Christianity, how we view our service and our ministry. You know, I'd love to help, but that would really be an inconvenience. Or I'd love to give more, but I could really use that. And our mindset becomes more about what we need and what we're doing than it does about how we're truly serving other people. And Jesus, in his final passage in Matthew 25, flips that perspective on its head. Now, he's done this all the way through the book of Matthew. This is not new. That's why we called it the upside down kingdom, right? That Jesus has taken what society sees as normal and he flips it upside down and reverses it and teaches the opposite. And he says, as we come to the end of this teaching here this morning, that there is going to be a time of judgment, and that judgment is going to reveal our hearts. Right, and we just read the passage that, and understand that Jesus doesn't commend those people in this passage. He doesn't commend those who had accumulated the most in this life. He doesn't commend those who knew the most or had gathered the most things to themselves. Jesus commends those that loved him the most and demonstrated that love by loving other people too. Those are the ones that Jesus commends. The ones that gave themselves in service for other people. See, all of our society says, me, me. It's all about me. What can I get? What's in it for me? What do I want? What do I need? And Jesus says, listen, no, it's not about you. It's about others. It's about loving Jesus by loving others. The kind of faith that Jesus is looking for is one that is not centered on self, but one that is poured out in service to other people. And that's what we find in this passage. Now, the focus of these parables so far, and by the way, some commentators see verses 31 to 46 as a final parable in this series of parables. And certainly there are some pictures in here that might make you think that way, but I think this passage that we just read this morning is less of a parable and more of a prophecy, right? These are events that are actually going to happen. It's an event that will take place in the near future. But the focus on the parables up to this point has been being prepared, getting ready for the return of the king. Knowing that Jesus is coming back and being prepared, living properly and ready in light of that return, and investing our life in the kingdom, in the work of the kingdom, because Jesus is coming back. So let's be prepared. That's been the focus of the parables so far. But now, in this passage, the focus turns from being prepared to the actual coming of the king. The king has come, and now there is judgment. There's judgment on those that are excluded from the kingdom, and there's blessing on those that are admitted into the kingdom. And we see both of those, the judgment and the reward, in this passage. And so I want us to see just a few things here this morning as we look through this passage. First of all, notice the glorious return of the King. It says, when the Son of Man, in verse 31, shall come in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then shall He sit upon the throne of His glory. Remember, at the start of this Olivet discourse in Matthew 24, the disciples had asked a question. In fact, they had asked a couple of questions. Jesus talked about the temple being torn down, and they said, when are these things going to happen? Speaking of what Jesus just prophesied. And then secondly, they asked another question, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and the end of the age? And Jesus has given them the answer to that question. He's given them the signs of His coming. He's told them to be prepared, and now He is foretelling His actual coming. And the second coming is much different than the first. You know, when Jesus came the first time, it was a very simple, humble birth. It was relatively unknown and missed by most of the world. When Jesus came the first time, He was despised and rejected. He came as a suffering servant, hated by many, rejected by the ones that He came to save. He came as a child with His deity veiled. That was His first coming. But friends, when Jesus comes again, it's going to be a lot different than the first coming. The second coming will not be like the first. Instead of a simple, humble birth, now He comes in all glory with all the angels to sit upon the throne of His glory. Now He comes in power and judgment and glory, not as a suffering servant, but now He comes as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords to judge the people. Not as a sacrificial lamb, but now the coming conquering King. And all the nations will be judged. And friends, this is not just a possibility. This is a promise. Jesus said, I am coming. And this is what it's going to look like. Now, just like, let me say this as we look into this morning, just like many prophecy passages, there's a lot of disagreement on some of these passages that are a little more difficult to understand and interpret. And there was the same in this passage. A lot of the commentators that I read didn't agree with each other, and they had differing opinions on the timing and the people of this passage and all of those things. And so, you know, who are the sheep and who are the goats and the brethren that Jesus speaks of in verse 40. And so I don't want to get too deep into that theologically this morning. There are many good men who have different ideas and stand on different sides of the aisle when it comes to some of this interpretation. But I do want us to remember a couple of the truths that we mentioned a few weeks ago, some principles that we mentioned when we started Matthew chapter 24 and 25. And that is, first of all, that we need to understand what this passage meant to the original listeners. So as Jesus was speaking this to the disciples, what did this mean to them, to the first century church? How did they understand this passage, right? Jesus expected these disciples to understand what He was saying. Okay, so what did it mean to them? But then secondly, the second principle was this. Jesus gave us some of these things, these end time prophecies, these eschatological items, not so that we would argue over minor theological differences that aren't clear, but to motivate us in the meantime to godly living, that Jesus is coming, so live godly. And so I just want you to keep that in mind as we make our way through this passage. And so I'm going to share just quickly what I believe this passage is teaching, and then I'm going to make some application truths from that this morning. And so I hope you can follow along as I do that. So the glorious return of the King, but secondly, I want you to see the judgment of the King. We won't read all of it again. We read it a minute ago. Let's just read verse 32 and 33. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Now this passage clearly demonstrates, it describes a judgment, a dividing of sorts. Jesus says that as he comes and sits on that throne of glory, that all the nations will be brought before them, and he will divide them. He'll separate them as a shepherd would the sheep from the goats. And one will go to his right hand. Now, the right hand is often seen in the Bible as a place of honor and favor and blessing. And so the sheep go to the right hand and the goats go to the left. A place of rejection and disfavor. Everlasting punishment. It's interesting here that the verdict comes before the explanation. We're going to see the explanation as to why he's dividing them that way in just a second. But I want you to see a couple of things. First of all, I want you to notice the timing of this separation. When does this take place? That's one thing that commentators kind of disagreed on in some areas. When does this separation, when does this judgment take place? Now remember that Jesus has been talking all along up until this point about the events that are going to take place prior to his second coming. Prior to that coming and the establishment of his kingdom in the millennial period. And so Matthew chapter 24 and 25 has taken us all the way through the church age and the tribulation period up until the point where Christ comes and ushers in his millennial kingdom. That thousand-year period where Jesus rules and reigns in righteousness. And so this coming at the end of that thousand-year reign is the great white throne. That's the great judgment. This is not that judgment. This is the dividing, I believe, that takes place at the end of the tribulation and entering into the millennial reign. I think that fits into the greater context of Matthew chapter 24 and 25. And so this dividing is not the final judgment. This is the dividing. This is a judgment that takes place entering into the millennial period. So the timing of the separation. Secondly, notice the people of the separation. So the question is, who then is being judged? Who is Jesus dividing? Who are the sheep and who are the goats? And I actually believe there's a third group of people here, and they're mentioned in verse 40, where the king shall answer and say unto them, verily, remember, he's judging them on how they treated these ones. Verily, I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. So it seems like there's actually three groups of people here. There's the sheep, there's the goats, and then there's the brethren that Jesus talks about in those verses. And the sheep and the goats are being judged on how they treated those brethren. By the way, this dividing of sheep and goats was a common practice in this day and age. Sheep and goats were sometimes herded. They kind of mingled together, and then they were herded. And I've seen videos of them doing this, but they're herded down a chute where the shepherd sits on a fence at the end with a door, and he opens it one way to let the sheep go one way, and he moves it the other way. I don't know if you've ever seen that before, to let the goats go the other way. It's something that was very common, something that they would often do, and Jesus is talking about this. So this picture of the sheep and the goats being separated would be understood by all of these people. It says in verse 32 that as he comes and sits on his throne of glory, that all the nations will be gathered unto him. The word nations there is the Greek word ethnos. That word is very broad. It means, it can mean nation or tribe or people group. But often Matthew uses it, in fact, almost exclusively up to this point. There are a few exceptions. But almost every time that Matthew uses this word, he uses it to describe the Gentiles. And I think it seems to me that the picture here, the separating, is how the nations, the Gentiles specifically, have treated the Jews, the believers, the brethren, through and during the tribulation period. And so the sheep are those that have treated them well, and the goats are the ones that have not. And we'll see that in just a minute. The rest of this passage is the rewards or the judgment based on how these nations responded to and treated those that were in need. So in verse 34, the sheep, then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. So it doesn't talk about sheep and goats anymore, but now it's the righteous, the ones on the right hand. Those are the sheep. Those are the righteous ones. And they are given this invitation. Jesus says, come. Ye blessed of my Father. The word come that Jesus uses there is the same one that he used when he called the disciples to come to him. It's the same word that he used when he invited people to come and find rest in him. It's the same word he used to call the wedding guests to the feast. There's this invitation to come and rest in the Father. And by the way, that invitation is still open. Come and rest. Come and enjoy a relationship with him. But why does he say that to these sheep? Here's why. Because their faith was evidenced by the way that they treated God's people. By the way, this passage is not teaching and is not preaching a justification by works. They weren't saved because of their feeding or housing or clothing strangers or visiting them in prison. That's not why they were saved. The good works in this passage aren't the cause of their salvation. The good works in this passage are the evidence of their salvation. This is how we know that they were regenerate. This is the evidence. They loved the Lord, and so they served his people. And I think this is evidenced even more by their surprise in verse 37. They said, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you water, or saw we a stranger and took you in, or naked or clothed you, or in prison and came and visited you? When did we do those things? This was just the way that they lived. It was the right thing to do. Their salvation was evidenced. Their faith was shown in the way that they responded to Christ's people. And really to Jesus himself, he says in this passage. And Jesus is giving them evidence here that they do in fact belong to the kingdom. Not because they had earned their salvation, but because their lives were evidence that God had been at work in them. And on the other hand are the goats, who, by the way, were just as surprised as the sheep. You ever spoken to your children about something and they say, who, me? I did that? I was there? That's exactly what these goats say. Who, us? When did we see you hungry? When did we see you thirsty or naked or traveling or in prison? When did we see you and not minister to you? And Jesus says, it's what you did to those that are my children. You didn't respond to them. And to them, instead of the invitation to come, he says, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. Their lack of love and mercy to those that were in need demonstrated a heart that was not regenerate. Instead of mercy, there was neglect. And notice they weren't condemned for active cruelty, but they were condemned for a passive indifference. They just didn't care. And it showed their heart. Now, let me make a couple of applications, a few takeaways from this passage. I think there are a number of applications that we could probably make, but I think that the main one is this. The point that Jesus is getting across is this. Real faith shows mercy because it has received mercy. Real faith shows mercy because it has received mercy. Jesus is saying here, true believers show mercy because they are believers. We are drawn to show mercy to some people because they are Christians. Right? The least of his brethren. But I think on top of that is that we're also drawn to show mercy to some people because they're not Christians. Believers show mercy because they have been given mercy. We're drawn to show mercy to some because we see Christ in them, and we're drawn to show mercy to others because we want to see Christ in them. Right? We're drawn to show mercy to some because they bear the image and the name of Christ, and we help suffering unbelievers in the hopes that they will also come to bear the name of Christ. And to both, we show mercy. Paul says in Galatians 6, verse 10, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good therefore unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Listen, Jesus is saying here, listen, true Christians show mercy to other Christians because they are Christians. And that's one of the ways that your Christianity is shown to be real. You know, the reality is the real test of our faith isn't how loudly we sing or how much Bible we know. It's how we treat the least of these brethren. Real faith serves other people. Real faith shows mercy because it has received mercy. James says it this way, if a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you saying to them, depart in peace and be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? What good is it to them? He says, even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. Listen, if we don't ever bear the fruit of love towards brothers and sisters, the least of them, then our faith is dead. That's what Jesus is saying. Real faith shows mercy because it has received mercy. And so we show mercy to other believers. Does that mean then that unbelievers should not get our mercy? Because Jesus says, show mercy to those that are the least of these brethren. And I think the answer to that is emphatically no. We are to show mercy to all. In fact, Jesus says, if we only love those who love us, and we only do good to those that do good to us, then we're no different than the unbeliever. So yes, show mercy to your brothers and sisters when they suffer. That's what true families do. But if you only love your family, if you only sacrifice to relieve the suffering of your own family, you're no better, Jesus says, than an unbeliever. Show mercy to all. So you say, what do we do with this? Well, I think the challenge here this morning is this, to see people the way that Jesus sees them. The second group of people, the goats, the ones who understood and experienced the judgment of God, they didn't even see the needs. Right? When did we see you thirsty? When did we see you hungry? When did we see you without clothing? When? They didn't see the needs. Why? Because they were too preoccupied with themselves. And by the way, these things here, they're not even big acts of service, are they? They're just small, everyday things, giving a cup of water, giving something to eat, giving some clothes, going and making a visit in prison. These are just meeting the small, everyday needs, small, unnoticed acts of mercy. Listen, the sheep didn't even realize that they were serving Christ when they were serving others. It was just their habit. It was their heart to love and show mercy. I say this, if your faith never moves you to mercy, it isn't real faith. True believers help fellow believers because they bear Christ's name. And they help unbelievers because they want them to bear Christ's name. think the question from this passage is this. Are we seeing people like Jesus sees them? Or are we so wrapped up in ourselves that we're missing the everyday opportunities to love other people and therefore loving Him through loving other people? Do we see the needs of people around us? Are we meeting? Are we showing mercy? What are some ways that you can genuinely show mercy and meet the needs of people around you? What are some ways that we can stop making it about us and challenge this consumerism mindset and make it about others? How can you practically meet the needs of somebody this week? Maybe it is a meal. Maybe it's a visit. Maybe it's a phone call or a prayer. What is it that you can do? We're challenged here to meet the needs of those around us, that as we have received mercy, that we would show mercy to others and meet those needs. The other application, just quickly as we finish up, is this. We must live ready for the coming of the King. And I think really this summarizes all of chapter 24 and 25. And the point of all of this, as we put it all together, this overview, as we worked our way through this passage, the point is simply this. Jesus is coming again. And He is coming as the conquering, reigning King in His glory, who will judge the nations. And those that know Him will enter into life eternal, and those that don't know Him into everlasting punishment. A punishment that Jesus says was made for the devil and his angels, but given to all those that reject Him. And the question this morning to you is simply this. Are you ready for the coming of the King? Are you prepared? Do you know Him personally? Have you entered into a relationship with Him by faith? Listen, Jesus' arms are still wide open. There is grace and mercy available to you, but that won't last forever. The end of verse 46, it says, "And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal." And the question is, which one of those are you? Life eternal or everlasting punishment? And the deciding factor, friends, is what have you done with Jesus? Do you know Him? Are you ready? If He were to come today in all His glory, are you ready for the coming of the King? See, friends, one day the King will come. And on that day, what will matter most will not be how much we knew or how much we owned in this life or how comfortable we were. What will matter is what kind of faith we had. Whether it was the kind of faith that saw Jesus in the needs around us and loved Him enough to serve them. The sheep in this passage, they weren't keeping score over what they did. They were simply just living out who they were in Christ. You could see it in their heart and in their actions. May that be true of us. That when the King returns, He doesn't find a people who lived asking, "What's in it for me? What do I get out of this?" But He'll find a people that lived pouring themselves out in love for others and meeting their needs. And in doing so, that we were doing it for Him. May God find that kind of faith in us.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. My prayer is that God would use the preaching of His Word in your life in a special way. If there's any way that we can be a help to you, please feel free to reach out at bibcinfo@gmail.com. Or if you're in the area, you're always welcome to come join us in worshiping the Lord together every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and Wednesday at 6:30. May the Lord bless you today.